You're listening to Career Buzz here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, and it's a special show today focused on all things related to the National Advertising Benevolent Society, NABS, or NABS.org, a registered charity that provides services for communications industry professionals. Gabe Dunlop is a NABS ambassador and former national account manager for Astral Media, recently appointed to the newly created team of Media Markets and Innovation. As a NABS ambassador, Gabe's a member of a volunteer network created to reach the new generation within the advertising, media, and communications industry. I spoke to Gabe yesterday at the Astral offices at the corner of St. Clair and Yonge.
Welcome to Career Buzz, Gabe Dunlop.
Thanks very much, Mark.
What do you like about your career these days, Gabe?
Well, working at Astral's it's a great experience overall. So the culture here at Astral is about growing and trying to do things differently and challenging the norm. So the way that everybody else does things isn't the way that Astral does things. They try and swim upstream or swim differently, and it opens up a lot of opportunities if you work here. So If you're working in an opportunistic company, they want you to grow, and they give you opportunities to challenge the norm and bring ideas into the boardroom or to senior management or work as a team to completely and totally do things differently, which is very rare in today's world. There's a lot of companies that are, they play it safe, they want people to be marginalized, and the management makes all the decisions. Astral's not like that. I mean, they hire smart people for a reason, and they want to take everyone's energy and everyone's ideas and then try and aggregate them into the best, you know, strategic thrust that they can. So from an employee perspective, it's a really good place to be, and that's on a corporate level. For my career personally, so not speaking about Astral, the industry of like advertising and communications, it changes so quickly. And there's a lot of people out there that would argue that right now is probably the most exciting time to be in advertising, marketing, communications, because technology is just advancing so rapidly. So you look at a guy like Jack Meyer, who publishes the Jack Meyer Media Report out of the U.S. He's probably one of the most outspoken yet completely logical critics or experts in the media world. And he said, you know, one of the things that I would change about my career is to be 20 years younger. I'd want to start right now because it's exciting and it's different and it's so raging ahead. Like everything is chasing everything and there's nothing that stays at the front for very long. There's no forward operating unit. Everyone's following everyone and the leader can change any day.
Right, it sounds pretty exciting and inspiring. So what are you doing now? If you could just give us a kind of overview of your career and the different things that you're doing. I know you were recently moved into a new group. So can you tell us a little bit about what a typical week is and all the things that you get up to in your career these days?
Certainly. So when I started at Astral, I was a retail account manager, and I moved from retail sales to national, which is working with ad agencies and major national advertisers like McDonald's or Pepsi. And then I've just moved over, I progressed to what's called media markets and innovation. And the job of this team, it's a brand new team, we've just put it together, is to go out and educate and sort of evangelize out of home. In a way that's...
You just said out of home, in case listeners don't know what that means. What does out of home mean?
It's billboards and outdoor advertising.
Great.
So when marketers think to advertise, a lot of the major ones would gravitate towards a medium like television first, because it's bright and shiny and it's celebrity and it's cool. And out of home used to be at the forefront of thought when it came to leadership on creativity and things like that. But now everyone is doing this TV thing, right? The TV dance is the dance to do. So we're out there evangelizing the medium, talking about outdoor, and making it a little sexier, but all based on research and analytics and challenging the ways that people think of it.
So is it now an internal, you say evangelize, it's called media markets and innovation. So are you working still with clients, or are you sort of doing R&D and then bringing it back into the field?
It's both. So we partner with... We partner with some unique opportunities, and I have to be a bit obscure because there's some confidentiality around it, but we partner with specific opportunities where we could stand out differently, with award shows, for example, or where outdoor advertising typically isn't thought of. And then we try to take results back, like pre- and post-research results, to a client to explain how it worked and talk about what could change and sort of the analysis and understanding how the medium fits into the big picture. So I know it's a very obscure answer. It is client-facing, So about half of my time is outside the office and about half is inside the office working internally. And because like we're a new team, so we have to make sure that everyone internal is comfortable with the actions that we're going to take before we go and do them.
Right, so it's a little bit of, I don't know, tact and diplomacy internally before you move out and take your ideas out there.
Totally, yeah. There's a big diplomatic point to it, yeah.
Right, and that's interesting. You know, we've had a lot of guests on Career Buzz talk about their careers and trying to get at the strengths and skills behind it, and tact and diplomacy sounds like it might be one of them, and it's odd how sometimes those skills that you develop elsewhere start to really make a difference in your current career. So if we can take a step back, Gabe, and just find out how you got here, if you could take us on a bit of a whirlwind tour of your career that brought you to Astral, because you told us what happened in Astral. What did you do earlier on in career? What were you thinking that your career might look like, and then what actually happened?
Well, it depends on where you want to start. In grade 3, I was in swimming lessons. No, just kidding. I grew up in the country, so I grew up in southern Ontario, southwestern Ontario, and I came to Toronto to Humber College. I studied public relations. It was a 3-year diploma. And I was challenged because I wasn't necessarily a writer to start with, but PR is all about writing. It's being a wordsmith, a great wordsmith. So I ended up investing heavily, like all of my time into it, and I became really good at it. And I graduated and did an internship. I won an internship at Toronto Hydro Corporation in their corporate communications department. And I learned a lot from very good people, from really strong leaders, people who had worked on the Olympic bid for Toronto, great communicators, great executives. There was no limit to the exposure that I could get. So if I wanted to sit down with the CEO of the company, somebody would make it happen for me. They were really big on learning from each other and taking young people and taking that energy and harnessing it and sharing it among the company. So that was a good experience for me right from the get-go. But I learned very quickly that there's experts for a reason, right? There's people you can learn from as a young person as well. There's a lot to learn. After I finished my internship, I couldn't find a gig. I couldn't find a job.
You didn't get hired back at Toronto Hydro? They didn't say, gee, that internship, you know, now here's a full-time job, Gabe?
They gave me a 2-month extension. So somebody was sick and left the department on sick leave, and I got a 2-month extension to handle his job. And then he came back, and there were no openings at the time, so I moved on. I moved from there to Omni Television, where I completed a short internship in TV. I was a sales coordinator, which is a really glorified term for filing, faxing, like over and over again. And it became really redundant really quick. And I said, you know what, I'm gonna go crazy. So I got to get out of here. And there were great people there. Again, like I happened upon this cluster of really strong people. And one of them, by the name of Mike Kanzik, who's also involved with NABS, as it would happen, said to me, you know, you would make a great sales guy. You should consider being a sales guy. And the world says, like generally speaking, lawyers are the most mistrusted profession. Like no one trusts lawyers. And the second least trusted profession are salespeople. So to me, it was sort of like an insult because I was, you know, like a writer and I had my PR credentials and I had done a little bit of work. I had a portfolio going. And then he said, you know, I'd like to take the time and just walk you through how we go about this game of sales when it comes to advertising. And Mike, you know, is a really senior sales guy, and he took time on his lunches, and you know, he exposed me to some of the sales management there, and I finally understood a little bit more about what they were doing and how it was it's almost a mix between art and science. Sales and media and advertising, there's a creative element, and there's also, you know, the numbers side of things.
Yes.
So I finished my 3 months, and it wasn't a small contract. I could have stayed as long as I wanted, but I wanted to grow right away. I was like, I'm not making enough money, like all the motivators to get you going. And I wrote in a letter to an ad that was posted for Moto Media, and the Moto Media ad read, Rainmaker wanted someone who can open up the skies and get the dollars to come out. So I saw this ad in Marketing Magazine, so I wrote my cover letter. I got my wordsmith hat on, and it said, you know, get ready for like Hurricane Gabe, insane amount of rainfall predicted, cash flows of X, Y, and Z, and it was like a pitch letter. And I sent it to the vice president, and then I gave him a call the next day, and just, you know, following up, good etiquette to follow up. And he said, you're the only one that actually wrote something creative in their introduction letter, and it wasn't even really a formal way of doing it, and it was interesting. I'd be game for having a coffee if you can make time. So there we go, like, it happened so quickly that it was just by being different.
And did you get that job?
I got the job, yeah.
Thanks for telling us that. Like, those little stories are really important. You know, people so often put together standard applications, and you went above and beyond, and you tailored it, and you really knocked yourself out to get something amazing and creative. And the feedback was nobody else did something creative other than you, and you got it, and you followed up, which was another key proactive thing.
Yeah.
So thanks for telling us that story. Did the guy who mentored you, who you mentioned earlier, did he play a role in getting this first job also?
No, not at all. He encouraged me. I mean, I said that I had this opportunity, and his idea was take what you can get, because you've got nothing in your box of credentials on the sales side of things. Take what you can get, learn what you can, and then move on when you're ready.
Great story. Thanks for that. Is there any other key transition point from that point forward before we move on to your NAVS ambassador gig that you're doing now?
Yeah, there is. As I progress from like that gig, that job, to the next one, I started to realize, you know, it became really obvious that typical applications for jobs don't work. I mean, they sort of do, but it's a real long shot. It's like, you know, fishing with dynamite. You just hope for the best. So I went out and I started doing information interviews, which was something that someone at Toronto Hydro had put me on to. So before I came to Astral, when I was looking here, I think I set up maybe 10 different interviews with senior people.
And so these are like information meetings. I sometimes call them field research. Not a job interview, but just exploring and asking people about their jobs and about the company.
Yeah.
Good strategy. Lots of people don't do that. People know about it, but it's good to hear the results. So how did it work out for you?
It was dynamite, because good senior people actually like to help entry-level people. They like to help people who are hungry and who demonstrate that they want to grow and they want to try something new.
Okay, let me stop you there, Gabe. Like, that's a really key point. And if listeners right now are considering what to do in their own job search, let's say they're stuck or they're at an employer and they want to move, in terms of this strategy, this is a different strategy than simply responding to a job posting on a job board. This is actually being proactive. There's no job posting. You're just reaching out to people that you know, and it's an amazing thing. How did you connect with those people that you conducted these field research meetings with?
A couple of them. So the one person was really senior. He was the CEO of a radio company, and someone that I knew him. So I got a referral.
So it's the second. It's not your first connection. It's the one who, it's the who
totally.
You know, who knows the other people.
That's right.
Key part. Yeah,
that's right. And I was very, you know, being candid with everyone, not just like your wife or your brother or your buddies, but being candid with your colleagues and saying, I'm interested in learning about X. That's how it happened. So I was really honest with this colleague of mine who's an executive and said, I know somebody there. I'll set you up with a meeting. I'll vouch for you. So he did it. And then that CEO set me up with his VP, who then set me up with seven interviews across Canada. Like, it was pretty quick. And then from there, there were a few others that I cold called. I would see something in Marketing Magazine that was interesting. I'd highlight it. I'd flag it. Then I'd Google the person and see if I could get a bit of research, some quotes, see what they were up to. And then I'd call them.
And what was the result? What happened next as a result of these amazing meetings?
Oh, it snowballed. It was like a snowball effect, right? Like, it couldn't stop. So it just kept on going forward, because people want to progress you. And then you start to build a bit of a name for yourself. People are like, oh, I've heard of this guy. I know this guy. He knows so-and-so. And eventually, all of the pieces start to connect, and you're building momentum, right? You're building momentum. And again, like, whether it's sales or your marriage or travel or whatever you want to do, I'm a firm believer in momentum. Like, forward motion and positive forward motion, that's it. Like, that's what it's all about.
Where did you go to next because of that snowball effect, that momentum?
I ended up here at Astral.
That's how you got the job at Astral.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks for telling us. That's a great story. Really appreciate you sharing that. Let me just ask you about your NABS ambassador position. What do you do as a NABS ambassador? What does that mean to you?
Well, I'd sat on, I'd sat on another NABS committee, the ad auction, previous to this, and it was more of a committee by jury. So it was like everyone was involved equally, and there was one leader, but it wasn't like a lot of decision making and leadership potential for me. So I talked to Mike, and he said, you know, I've got this other committee, which was the NABS ambassadors. So I came on board just as a regular member, and then when the co-chair position came up, I was nominated, and I won it. I was appointed. So our job as a committee is to elevate the NABS brand, so to make sure that people who are under 35 years of age know about it. Because everyone who's 35 plus in the advertising industry knows about NABS. they participated in an auction, or they've been to an event, or they have a friend that works in the golf tournament. Somebody somewhere, somehow, 35 plus, knows about NABs, whereas the new generation isn't necessarily as familiar, or they weren't. So 5 years ago when this was conceived, it was sort of it turned into a party committee, and I came on in year three. We changed it and we wrote a business plan. We actually put a business plan on paper. We committed to revenue goals. We decided we would do 4 events per year. And this past year, we changed our programming from 4 parties to 3 parties and 1 professional development event called Speed Mentoring. And Speed Mentoring serves the interest of young people, those under 35, who are looking to advance their career. They have those big questions that they're not comfortable asking someone in their workplace. So we get 20 executives, directors, and vice presidents together, and they sit down in a room together. It's like speed dating. The bell goes in, and all the little mentees move. Not little mentees, they're good people.
Yeah.
And the directors stay in their seats, and they get like 5 minutes with each one.
Great. So it sounds amazing. You're really connecting these people under 35 with what they need to know about. Let me ask you, in your own career, thinking about your volunteer activities, this is one, maybe you're doing others. How does this volunteer activity help you in your own career development?
It gives me the opportunity to practice leadership and practice co-leadership, because I have a co-chair on this committee, Julie Howlett, and we have to work together on things. If we don't agree on something, it's like typical, you know, two bosses sitting down. You lock the door, you order some food, and you got to work it out. So it's good just business planning in general. It's good leadership. We track a BCR, we track a budget throughout the year, and, you know, from a career perspective, this exposes me to NABs leadership. So the people who are involved elsewhere at NABs on other committees, I get to liaise with them. So it builds my network. My professional network grows exponentially. And there's another thing. I don't believe in linear growth. I believe in exponential growth. If you can grow something by 10, why not? Why would you do it by 1? So by being on this committee, I have 12 people that work on the committee with me, right? They're all equals.
Right on. So if listeners are thinking, gee, you know, what's the point of volunteering? What I'm hearing from you is there's a couple of really amazing things. One is developing leadership skills, which looks great on a resume or looks good in your future career. And two, it builds your network. It sounds like it's a really good thing. Would you recommend listeners do more volunteering or strategic volunteering in the way you're doing it?
Yeah, I would absolutely recommend that. And there's a great one for those with professional skills in Toronto if they want to volunteer. It's called the Timeshare. Have you ever heard of the Timeshare?
No.
Yeah. Okay, the Timeshare is those with professional training who are young and getting, like, building a portfolio or building skill sets. They can go and they can donate. They can commit to donating hours, and their hours count as currency against artwork. And you can win pieces of artwork based on donating your hours.
Great. Is that a website? Where do people go for that? Is it timeshare.something?
I think it's... I'm trying to remember the name of it.
I'll get that later. Final question, Gabe. Given your own career trajectory and your personal experience that you've shared here with us on Career Buzz, what have you learned about making good career and life choices?
Well, what have I learned? Well, sometimes you have to go with your gut. I mean, your body has intuition built into it for a reason. So you have to listen to your instincts. Working for good people and safe people is sometimes the right thing you do in your career. You don't always necessarily know where you'll want to go, but if you're learning and you're growing, you're probably in a good place right now. And one of the senior people here at Astral, I have some mentors internally here, not formally, but internally, yeah. I asked her, you know, how do I continue to progress? And she said, stop worrying about tomorrow. Like, just do a great job today and make sure you're learning today and every day and you're challenged, and tomorrow will come. Like, it's going to come.
That's great advice. Gabe Dunlop, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Career Buzz here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, and it's a special show today focused on all things related to the National Advertising Benevolent Society, NABS, or NABS.org, a registered charity that provides services for communications industry professionals. Monique Madan has worked with large financial institutions as well as public sector and not-for-profit agencies, and now she runs an independent financial planning firm. Monique Madan is the NABS go-to person when clients need financial planning assistance. And Monique joins us here on Career Buzz. Welcome, Monique.
Thanks so much, Mark.
So, Monique, what do you like about your career these days?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I don't think anybody really feels comfortable with their finances at all these days, and any reassurance I can provide to clients is very, very heartwarming. I've always loved money management, but these are unique times, and I have unique opportunities to help the clients that come to me now. So it's just a wonderful, wonderful career.
And what are all the things you're doing? I said it in the intro, you've got an independent financial planning firm. What is that firm, and who do you work with?
In essence, I work on my own and represent the clients as their advocates for their financial services. And essentially what I do is I'll sit down and help individuals and couples, families, to articulate their financial goals. Some of those goals will be to get out of debt or just to feel a little bit more stable in their finances, whatever the case may be. And then I'll go and analyze their current situations and see if I can recommend patterns of saving or spending changes or tax planning to help them get to those goals. And not too often, but periodically, we do need to reassess those goals to see if they're really feasible. And I do that directly with the client on a fee-for-service basis, an hourly rate or a project base. And then they're free to either have me help them quarterback the process with their financial institutions, or they can go ahead and implement the recommendations themselves. I actually don't sell any product at all, so it's just a wonderfully unbiased and very free type of work that I can do. It's wonderful.
Right. So that's a little different than listeners might be familiar with representatives who work at different financial institutions, and they call themselves financial planners as well. So the difference is that you're not connected to any products or services. Is that right?
Quite right. Quite right. So what ends up happening is the financial world is often divvied up in two ways. So the big brokerage houses will have investment advisors who will see to your investments, quarterback different loans if they're appropriate, and look at some insurance planning as well. Those same individuals in a bank would be referred to as a financial planner, but that's not the type of work I do. Mine is purely analysis. Think of me as a generalist, not unlike your, you know, general practitioner, your physician, or a lawyer that you go to saying, this is my circumstance, what do I need to do from here? And then it's a bit of diagnosis and then recommendations.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And now, how did you get into this, Monique? Did you always know that you wanted to be in financial planning and services? How did you get started in all this?
You know what? In fact, not unlike many of your clients, I'm sure, I was quite a late bloomer in this field. I actually studied psychology at U of T, so I'm not unaccustomed to roaming around those halls.
Yes.
And I, in fact, probably like many of your clients, bought my interest in money management simply because I always associated it with product sales. And I never really thought of myself as an investment broker or an insurance salesperson. And probably because I don't have a lot of tolerance for investment markets, I find them very, very intimidating and unpredictable.
Yes.
So I never really thought that there would be a place in the financial world for pure advice giving. And it was only after I did a few courses that I came to understand that there are, you know, we're few and far between in the fee-for-service world, but there are people who are doing this type of work, and it perfectly suits my interest. It just needed a little bit of digging. You must see that with your clients too.
All the time. People don't know what's out there, and they don't know what they like. And sometimes they have, I call it theories. They have a theory about how the world works, but they haven't checked it out. And it's until you check it out and start talking to others who are doing something that you're interested in that they get surprised, often very pleasantly.
You know what? The theory that you're talking about is probably the best way to describe it, because I knew that there was a need for this. And I just needed to find the right place and the right way to distinguish myself through education and experience to make people understand that that was worthwhile advice. So I really like the way you term that.
Yes. Now, you did have some stops along the way in your career. I said in the intro you'd worked for some larger institutions. What did you do there before starting your own firm?
Well, essentially, I think it was part of the training process as well. I started in the not-for-profit world. I really have a propensity towards public service, so I really enjoyed that, but I thought it was limiting in certain ways. Then I went off to a large financial institution, and even though the work was spectacular, I mean, really, really drew my creativity, drew my interest. As a young parent, I wasn't able to give them what they wanted, so it simply wasn't a good fit in that respect.
Because of the work-life balance piece.
Exactly.
Not so much of the content of the work. And what was your position there?
Essentially, I was doing what I do now for private clients,
yes,
but inside a financial institution.
Right.
There's a different slant when you're working with a financial institution. Of course, there's a little bit of need to look for opportunities for the financial institution to make money, and I don't need to do that now because I work solely for the client. But nonetheless, the requirements of that particular job, it's, you know, it wasn't proximal to my home. I had to commute a long distance, and it just wasn't conducive to a young family.
Right.
And then after that, I ended up working with a government agency doing financial planning for persons who are incapable, and I just ate it up. It was just wonderful, wonderful work with a great group where I really broadened my understanding of social services and benefits, and ultimately, you'd be surprised how much I use that information today with my clients, and in particular with many of the NABS clients.
So that's interesting because you do work with NABS. Louise here had mentioned earlier that you're one of their partners. So what do you do with NABS?
Well, essentially, I get two types of clients from NABS. One set of clients are those who are currently employed and just need financial counseling and advice with regards to optimizing their situation. So examples might be people who find themselves debt-ridden or just having trouble making ends meet, don't really appreciate what they're spending, and need maybe some advice on how to optimize those financial resources. The other set of NABS clients, which is a really, really rewarding part of the job, is those who maybe have exhausted financial resources or nearly exhausted what they had, and they're applying for grants and support through NABS, who are wonderfully generous in offering, when people meet criteria, offering certain supports, financial supports. And so what I do for those clients is I will counsel them on how they can reduce their expenses during periods of prolonged unemployment, how they can tackle dealing with creditors, how they can access some savings that they've got if they still do, and then if all of those opportunities are exhausted, what can they look to by way of social benefits or assistance from NABS? And what I'll do in that respect is diagnose a shortfall. So if I can diagnose a shortfall, then Louise and her good team can then go ahead and assess whether they meet the criteria for funding, and they can maybe bridge that shortfall.
Yeah, amazing, amazing combination of organizations and services coming together. Do you also find, Monique, there's this interaction between what somebody's career and employment situation is and the financial situation? How do you find that those two pieces interact with clients that you speak to?
Well, in essence, I mean, they're exactly interrelated. I mean, forget about someone's self-worth with regards to their earnings, but there's so much involved with what you can afford, what you can't afford. Are you living within your means, which you'd be surprised and shocked to hear that most people don't, no matter what level of income they're receiving. Are they overridden in debt? All sorts of a myriad of different discussion points. And what I help them do is come to the realization that this is what you're earning or not earning. In fact, I can broaden their scope of their work search by helping them to diagnose exactly what they need to earn so that they don't need to put themselves in a more ambitious income bracket, which may be harder to find. If I can diagnose this is what you really need to make in order to make ends meet, it can broaden their work search.
That's a key point, freeing too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we find that, like, you know, as career professionals, you ask people, what do you want? And everybody says money, and then you ask how much. And generally, people don't have a good answer to that, and they don't have clarity around what their life costs them. And that's a key point, Monique. Thanks for making it, that sometimes people don't need to push so hard. And something else that might give them more life balance and more enjoyment, honestly, without pushing for the so-called the best job. It might be something actually that's really good.
Oh, and I think you've put it, you really hit the nail on the head. The best job could very well be one that is not what they've done before and one that is not earning what they have before.
Yes.
But might be closer to home, or as I've done in my own career, you know, leaving a downtown base with a large firm to be a little bit more available for my family, and it has its own rewards in that respect.
Yes.
I can't tell you how many times I've heard someone say, well, I can't possibly take a job that earns X per year. And I say, well, why not? Of course you can.
Yeah.
You know, this is what you would need to do. This is how you would have to structure your affairs. This
yes.
is what you would need to curtail by way of expenses. And of course you can make it happen.
We just have a moment here, Monique. Last question. Given the changes that you've experienced, and especially the big one of leaving an organization and starting your own firm, what can you share with listeners about what you've learned about making career and life choices?
You know, I think in a lot of ways, I wonder if you also give this advice. You have to kind of just be willing to listen to your gut and not willing necessarily to see the world as other people see it.
Yes.
So, you know, especially in the financial industry, it's, you know, women remain to be rare. Certainly fee-for-service work like I do continues to be rare. And who's to say that it's not a lucrative and important service? Of course it is.
Yes.
You just have to make it happen. And I'm a firm believer that if there's a worthwhile service that you're offering, just go for it and make it happen.
Right on. And Monique, finally, if people want to find out more about you and understand more about your services, what do they do?
Oh, with pleasure. They can contact me. My phone number is 647-297-2376, or visit my website, which is www.moniquemadden. I'll spell that, M-O-N-I-Q-U-E. M-A-D as in David, A-N as in Nancy, MoniqueMadden.com. Or I'm sure the information will be on your website,
It
right?
will be. Monique Madden, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz today. Much appreciated.
A pleasure. Thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com. Two other hosts of Career Buzz are Leanne Sachs at livinginthemoment.ca and Louisa Jewell at whydidyougo.com. Next week, Friday, November 11th, Leanne Sachs will be with you, and I'll be back on November 26th. If you have any comments on today's show, please email me at Mark, with a K, Mark, at careercycles.com. Thanks to my guests today, Louise Barabee, Monique Madden, Gabe Dunlop, and Stéphane Denis. And thanks to our tech, Julian Dunn. An MP3 of this show today is available from the Career Buzz link on careercycles.com. Catch Career Buzz every Friday at 11 a.m. on CIUT. That's it for today's version of Career Buzz. Thanks for listening.